I think everyone in the country has heard about Betty and Barney Hill, about the book Interrupted Journey and the UFO picture that was just on TV the other night. Well, there's a gentleman. The name is Dr. Benjamin Simon. He's a psychiatrist in the Boston area, and he was called on to interview, psychoanalyze, and hypnotize Betty Hill and Barney Hill. So let's switch out to his home and welcome Dr. Simon to our program. Dr. Simon?
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you very much for staying up this late. I know that you're a daytimer, and I appreciate you staying up this late to come on the air with us.
Mm-hmm.
What are you... Did you take a nap before you were called?
No, I just watched TV.
Oh. Now, what I'd like to do is do a step-by-step. I'd like to start from the beginning, mm-hmm. if you would, and hit a lot of details that have been eliminated in other types of media. And as we go along, I just want you to give us your personal opinion, what you can say. I know that for some time you were hesitant and reluctant to say certain things. I'd like you just to say, just be candid and tell the folks whatever you think. And then later, if with your permission, we'll take some calls from people around the country, okay?
All right.
Now, let's start from the beginning. This started in the early 60s. And when did you first enter this story of Benny and Barney Hill?
Well, it was in the late 63, quite near Christmas time. And I kept an appointment, which my secretary had made with a Mr. Barney Hill. When I went into the waiting room, there was a white woman present, too. I thought she might be there for one of my associates. He gave me essential stories that he had been under treatment for about a year with a New Hampshire psychiatrist for marked anxiety. He had also symptoms, high blood pressure. And over the year, he hadn't gotten very far and was only recommended to me by his psychiatrist. At that time, Betty was there purely as his life's companion. Well, they began almost at the beginning with a 6-page report from NICAP, which I had never heard before. It's the National Investigating Committee for Aerial Phenomena. And this is the story of their seeing an unidentified flying object, which was investigated by a NICAP investigator who made this report, had intimated that they were quite honest people and that he believed the story. That story had first come to light during the treatment by his New Hampshire psychiatrist. He felt that this might be of some interest because also there was a feeling on the part of both Barney and Betty that there was something in their lives, 2 hours or so, which seemed to bother them but for which they could not account. They were just a blank for it. Well, this is true of both. And then, Barney's symptoms had begun just after they had this supposed sighting, Betty had responded by a series of dreams extending over a week or more of a nightmarish quality. So it seemed that this problem really involved both of them in their experiences, and I undertook to take both into treatment and use hypnosis to penetrate what appeared to be an amnesic period with very vague background. The only feeling they had was that on coming back on a trip from Canada, they got home about 2 hours later than they should have. And they had no idea what had happened, if anything, during these 2 hours. So that was the beginning, and I must insist that everyone understand that these two people came to me not for an investigation of UFOs or any of the things that later developed. They came to me from stress and anxiety. This was all of the rest that transpired afterward, built into the story and everything, was a consequence of the findings in doing the treatment of the two. Which was substantially successful in about 7 months.
Okay, now would you start with your treatment and I'd like to know your reaction when you heard
they have experienced. And how far did they go back? How far did you regress them before they started telling
you? Well, I took them back to a starting point of Montreal. They had been to Niagara Falls and were coming home. And Montreal, you might say, was at the top of the journey, if you watch it on a map coming down to New Hampshire. And there didn't seem to be much before that. I took that as a takeoff point. And simply, under hypnosis, which was quite deep, told them, well, I took them one at a time, of course, so we begin with Barney, and directed him to tell me everything that happened on that trip, all the feelings he had, all the experiences were to be related, and so on. This would be somewhat different from the written report, which was a written report. Here they were to really act out or relive that trip.
Could you tell us now Bonnie's report? Can you remember clearly Bonnie's report and then what? And then Betty's report?
Yeah. Well, I can simplify the whole thing by saying that Barney and Betty gave the same story. And that story was precisely like the story that had been written up by the NICAP investigator. There were no significant differences, in fact, practically no differences between the three. This story they each gave consciously. Remember now, this was spread over quite a bit of time. But I took Barney up to a, pretty well through it, then followed by Betty. So we came along, we had the burn in. What marked the trip, particularly from Barney's point of view, up to the time of the sighting, was a revelation coming mostly from his unconscious of the marked anxiety he had in being a black man in a white culture. To me, this is the most important part in the revelations of the feelings of a human being in surroundings which he felt to be inimical to him. And as he made the trip down, they would stop to eat. He would wonder if he was going to be allowed in, or they stopped at a motel, something like that, whether they would accept it, because he was a black man. All of this seems like he had never been. Anxiety, feeling of being watched, feeling of danger. Danger. This went on and on till we came to a point, dusk was coming, and it got to a point where they were in near some lonely woods where he wondered if there were bears and the bears might come out and harm him. There were some experience on that up in a tent here in which he, as would be seen in the movie, groveled on the ground, screamed with terror, and that preceded then the actual sighting, which I've seen the well-described type of vehicles, often round, saucer shape, crescent shape, whatever you will, of the men there, so on. During the time he was doing this outside and watching what he supposed was this, they were trying to determine what it was. They thought of a plane, of a Piper Cub, various things like that. Barney did not show strong convictions that it was anything but some wayward plane or what you will. Betty stayed in the car for the most part. Their little dog, Dulcie, was frightened, and Betty began to become anxious. It seemed to me she was much more anxious about Barney out on the road sort of walking away and then back to the car. Then she was about what they saw, though she herself felt that it was some sort of UFO. She had much more conviction on that than Barney. So we went through all of that scene, and in this, both shared exactly alike. We continued on with it. Naturally enough, I was constantly on the alert for what this could mean, whether it was a hallucination or what sort of thing. Whether there might be something present, and of course UFO was constantly in the words and in the air, particularly in Betty. All the story had been told to me, and all the information were that they gave exactly the same story. There was no difference that they both shared the same experience all the way. However, as we went along, I finished Barney on a sort of a note of exaltation. His fears were quieted, and he was feeling better, at least at that time. When I went to Betty, story up to that point of the sighting of the so-called UFO or whatever it was, Betty's story and Barney's were the same. She, being a different personality, gave a little more gaiety to it and so on, didn't show as much terror, and she went much further than Barney, where he ended up on a note of, well, he'd been through an experience and took a deep breath and went home. By the way, well, let's go on first. Betty's story went on beyond that in telling the story of having been, that the UFO had landed, had made beeping sounds, and had stalled their motor, and various things of that sort, and had caused silver-like spots to appear on their car. However, it seemed to land. And then men emerged from it, and I suppose everyone who has seen the movie has seen what the men were supposed to look like, a rather oriental cast and so on. A usual type of presumed extraterritorial visitors from wherever they may come. She went on with a fantastic story of having been taken aboard. She described Barney as with his eyes closed, as sort of suspended between two men who were half dragging him along to the same vehicle. And she was had her eyes open and did not have to be dragged. And she was taken along by what appeared to be the leader of the group and taken aboard the same vehicle. There, they were separated. Barney was taken into a room, presumably for the same purpose as she was into her room, that is, an examination. And on board, they conducted a physical examination of her in the fashion that anyone who's been to a doctor would quite well recognize. And there I was. The UFO didn't trouble me. First, I want to say I believe implicitly in the honesty of these people, and still do. Barney, of course, attend.
What did you personally think? Did you think that they were hallucinating at this time?
Well, it depends on what you mean. There certainly was not psychotic hallucinations. And up until Betty's story, I took it as a clear relation of things that had happened. But when she began to give all the experiences of being examined, take the board, reading maps, all sorts of things like that, I still didn't feel they were hallucinations in the more psychotic sense, but they certainly were a marked deviation from the very matter-of-fact things that had gone up to then. All of that was easily believable. Now, here we are, was faced with this, with a story that was very fantastic. That is the, now we make a sharp division between the sighting and width of the vehicle and the ultimate experience of being abducted, taken aboard, and everything that followed thereafter. This had me in a bind. I was now faced with certain decisions, and I couldn't make them. That is, was, if this were real and true, I would have to believe that these supposed people were from outer space, and we were having what everybody hopes we'll have, and nobody has proved at all, our visitation from outer space, the old classical UFO, as it's called. Well, by the way, I must define UFO as I see it, means an unidentified flying object, and that's all it means. It can be Menzel's balloons, weather balloons, misinterpreted, or anything else. It does not, by its definition, imply visitation from outer space, which might or might not be a part of it. And I insist on remembering that, because I, too, have seen a couple of UFOs, and both of them became IFOs at a later time. That is, they became identified flying objects. However, there I was. I believed in their honesty. The story was fantastic and unreal, and either had to be rejected or accepted. Then, at that point, I became aware of something. That at the point, up to the point of the fighting and those experiences, the two stories were exactly alike, and everybody had said, well, they are alike all along, but they weren't alike. Betty's experiences were far more vivid, far clearer, and much more material there than Barney, who simply felt himself as being supported with his eyes closed. What turned up then, as I reviewed it all, everything that Barney had said, which was very little about that abduction, was in Betty's story. She saw it, she saw him being dragged away and all that. Nothing of Betty's story, but nothing was in Barney's story. So they were not alike from that point on.
Did he reject any of her story?
Well, there wasn't a question of that. At that point, he didn't know. The question of validity came up much later when everything was over and we were going over the material.
What about his testimony about the 2 hours? Did it coincide with her testimony?
Both of them gave the same. Right. However, in giving it, they both gave the answer to the 2 hours. It was very clear. It was not due to that abduction, which they suppose had taken place in the 2 hours and had been repressed on instruction from these visitors.
I was just wondering if we took two other people and had them experience something for 2 hours, would their testimony be identical, or would they differ?
If it was true, they should be identical. Everything else was identical up till then. But now the question, they two were not alike, very very markedly different. So. Realizing then that this difference was critical, Betty gave by far the most elaborate story, the needle in the navel and all the things which I can't stop to describe. They're all a part of the story in the book and in the movie. Some fantastic examinations, resembling things that you might find in an American hospital. That was the turning point. I had to explain that or accept the fact, since I believe their honesty, that this was truly a visitation out of space, though there were many questionable places in it, because the thing, or everything that was done was in the American style or American type instruments. And even in England, for example, while surgeons may do the same thing, the instruments may accomplish the same, and they're different. That would be true anywhere. A lot of things of that sort, and if you inquire later or ask about it, I might give you an example here or there. But the point was that the turning point was, again, as I said, that difference in their two stories. And the second realization that Betty gave a very elaborate story, a very elaborate and detailed one, and Barney gave a minimal story, that everything that occurred with Barney was known to Betty, and nothing of Betty was known to Barney. Then I realized that there had to be some substance, something behind that difference. And I remembered at that point that when they first saw me, Betty had these dreams, these nightmarish dreams. Of course, the other thing I had to find out is how did it get to Barney? In further investigation, I asked Betty if she had told her dreams to Barney. She said no, he was working night, so he wasn't home. When I asked Barney if she told him, he said no. Now, there's one thing that is important, that a hypnotized person tells the truth. But you've got to remember, which I remember later, that he tells it as he sees it, as it seems the truth to him, which may not be the true reality. That doesn't mean he has lied or malingered. Well, as I went along with that and saw this deviation, I remembered that one of the many Betty's symptomatology, in contrast to Barney's anxiety, were these nightmarish dreams. She had not told me what they were. She said she had written them down at the time they occurred. That means way back in 61. But couldn't find. I asked her to bring it in. She said she couldn't find the dreams. I subsequently directed her under hypnosis to bring it in, and she found it and brought it in. I have it. Now, when Betty told all of this story, I asked her, remembering somewhat the nature of the dreams, asked her if that wasn't just like her dreams. She said, no, it wasn't. And I asked her what the difference was. She said, well, in the dreams, she had gone up a ramp. And in the, now this may be wrong, it may be reversed, but it doesn't matter. There's a difference. And in the reality, she'd gone up some steps. I asked if wasn't this a difference without a distinction, or a distinction without a difference, whichever way you want to put it. And she denied it. That was the difference, was that she went up ramps and considered that important. So I directed her to bring in her dreams, that she would find them and bring them in the next session she brought them. And they were fully typed out by herself at the time they occurred. That's very important, back in 61. And on a careful inspection of that with her story, they were exactly alike with one difference, that in the dream, she went up both a ramp and steps. Well, she and Barney were both taking up ramp and steps. That's all. Otherwise, they were exactly alike. And still, she would not accept fully that they were the same. Well, that gave me an answer at that point, that this fantastic story was her dreams. And therefore, we could fit that very well with reality. I mean, dreams of that sort are highly admissible. And so I was satisfied. I didn't have to look any further for an explanation. I wouldn't have to accept under our present conditions the existence of visitors from outer space, however they are described, whatever they were.
Dr. Simon, we're going to take a break now. And when we come back, I'd like to ask you about the revelation of this constellation of the stars and today's discovery of these stars. And I'd like you to tell us about that, and then later we'll take...
At least what it was then.
Okay.
About today's discovery, they've been mentioned. I'm not impressed. I haven't gone into it.
Very good. Okay. Let's continue. Dr. Simon?
Yes.
Okay. Let's continue, if you would, with those. See, I didn't see the motion picture of the TV show. Now, what was the story? And people called last night and asked about the stars that she identified in the early 60s and that none of the astronomers or scientists knew about until recently. Can you tell us that story?
Well, I don't know much about that story. That's Betty's story.
Oh, yes.
And I'm convinced that much they're open to question. And so I haven't bothered, because it isn't particularly relevant. If, in the first place, I'll have to take an excerpt out of the situation she had when, in the dream, but in her abduction, let's put it that way, the leader, and she got quite friendly, and he told her to answer her questioning about where they were and where they came from, and he said, well, if he would tell her where they came from, if she would tell him where she came from. And so he pulled down a map, which had a bunch of stars in it, and showed it to her. And I asked her later to draw me that map. And what she drew was a map with a number of stars in it and a lot of lines, dotted lines and hard lines, one of which, she said, represent a trade route between the stars in the universe, and the other one represented trade routes or expeditions. And in this case, ended up in the map that you see in the book, or have seen illustrated, and what you saw in the movie at the end. If you can call it a map, it was looked like a sort of a bobtail cucumber, and then, subsequent to that, she ran into an article in the New York Times representing some radio sound or waves coming out of some stars in space. And these were given certain names. The Russians had paid to hear radio sounds from that. And she superimposed that on her map, and it seemed that these stars all coincided. The result of that situation, she wanted to take a copy of it with her, but when she couldn't show him where where she was, he said, well, if you don't know where you are, we won't tell you where we are or where we came from. The situation, by my interpretation, is very obvious. She couldn't show him where she was because she was standing on it. In other words, she was giving this in the viewpoint of the Earth, not of someone who's out in space, and therefore she couldn't show the thing she was standing on. Others have made that observation, too. Well, she claims that one of those stars that she put on there has just recently been discovered. If that is true, of course, and if her map is valid, then the only thing she can claim is that she has precognition. I don't know how many of us are willing to accept that. If you don't understand why people have precognition, it's sort of foretelling the future.
I think, in your opinion...
I think this is simply something that she believes, and she has put together things. I'm not enough familiar with them because I don't consider them significant in my point. Let me point out that when she first threw that map, class in Washington has cited, has mentioned his theory of ball lightning as a base stimulus. In my case, the U2 stimuli, without giving the story, turned out to be an American airline plane, and the one which I saw long before I ever knew the hills, and one subsequently seen by me and another psychiatrist, turned out to be a brilliantly lighted sign outside of Hartford, which was reflected through misty sky and stayed with us for quite a while, so on.
So you think?
Now there's one thing that is shown, and actually they got that into the movie, it's not that clear, is that when they stopped at their last lights, there was a, it looked as if some men working in the road, and if you saw the movie, that is shown there, and that could have been very much a thing misinterpreted as a UFO in the other sense of the word. And that about rounds out the story. In
very good.
The sketch outline.
When Betty and Barney Hill were interviewed by NICAP, do you know, did the people in NICAP buy their story, hook, line, and sinker?
Yes. And NICAP made one of the greatest mistakes I have ever seen. And that is that the interviewer was a scientist. And there was the story of these silver spots about the size of a silver dollar on the back of their car.
Yes.
Which they said at the time were still on the car. And for God knows what reason, he never went out to look at them.
I was going to ask you about that. Were they still visible? Who saw them?
Well, nobody but Betty and Barney.
Right.
But that is, at least Betty spoke of them more. But here was an opportunity to see one single objective thing. You know, we've never had a single objective thing about one of these. Here was a chance to see the spots, at least.
What happened to the car? I mean,
Well, eventually they went away.
Oh, I see.
They were washed away eventually. Could I pause for just a moment on that? I find that I didn't finish the one major point.
Sure.
That is, that how did, when Betty denied telling it to Barney, and Barney denied being told, there I was again, because I believe they were telling the truth, how did this Betty story get to Barney, or fragments of it? Well, I asked her, she told you, as I said, to anyone, she said to her sister, and her supervisor, the one who suggested that this might not be a dream but a reality. And I asked, where was Barney? Well, of course, he was working nights. And where was he, since he must be around in the daytime? Well, he was over in the corner fussing around with something. So here is a classical thing of what a hypnotized person can do. He tells the truth, and he lies at the same time. That the literal thing was, of course, she didn't tell it to Barney, and the literal thing was that she didn't tell it to Barney coming from him. But she did tell it in Barney's presence, and that's where he got it. And so it was both the truth and lie. As they saw it, they used the literal thing of telling, meaning a verbal expression directly to someone. That's all. That clears that part up very beautifully.
Okay.